Tonight, I just want to say it's very lovely to see many people who I haven't seen for a really long time here. That's great. I was going to remark that we were kind of in equal thirds of people here for the first time, people who were here last week and people who haven't been here for quite some time, but now we've shifted a little bit. Welcome. You stay after and I'll give you a little bit of an introduction to the stuff that you may have missed just to say hi and stuff. Great. Welcome. Glad to have you. So tonight, my main teacher, James Ford, is a really great teacher in many ways. He is not the least bit quotable, though. However, one of the things that he said that really that really touched my heart and really has stuck with me for as a really kind of a beacon and a guidepost. He said to me very early, he said, "The way is wide and forgiving." And it's this wide and forgiving way that I want to talk about a little bit tonight. This is the path that we're on. This is a practice of doing what we can do in the amount we can do it when we can do it. Now that seems, it may seem a little bit obvious or a little bit nothing special, but it so easily becomes, we so easily want to make it into a path about doing something we can't do, doing it more than we can do it, and doing it before we can do it. And we see this even in the simplicity of Zazen. And Zazen is, of course, the super stripped down version, the most straightforward place that we practice this wide and forgiving path. We practice being received by the wideness of this path and forgiving both ourselves and the path as we walk it. So the most simplified place that we practice these skills is in Zazen. And so if we're doing some form of breath practice, in which when we notice that our mind has moved away from full attention on the breath, we unhook from whatever storyline we're caught in, bringing it back to the breath, back to the posture, back to Zazen. And we usually like to start that process of noticing that we've gotten caught and bringing it back. We like to start it with a good round of self-criticism. We like to when we notice that, we like to tell ourselves what a bad job we're doing at Zazen, how we're never going to succeed, in fact, that being bad at Zazen is pretty much a given the fact that we're such bad people to begin with. And so we start with these stories about ourselves, layered on kind of unnecessarily. But all of that comes from a belief, part of it comes from a belief that we should be doing more than we can do. So, or we should be doing it before we have the chance to do it. And the practice of Zazen is about starting to give ourselves the chance to be choicefully present. It's about starting to give ourselves more options. But so the mind goes where the mind goes. It does its things. This is because of this is because of all of the conditioned karma, the habit patterns, the ways that we've been using our mind since beginningless time, or since we were born. And so, and the mind has its own energy, and thought patterns kind of have their own energy, and they arise naturally. That's part of what the mind does. In a way, the mind secretes thoughts in exactly the same way that the stomach secretes stomach acids, digestive juices. And we usually, we don't have any choice. We don't have any action point until we have noticed that, oh, I'm thinking about lunch. Oh, I'm talking to myself about that guy who annoyed me. And until we do that, we don't have, there's nothing we can do. There's no choice point. But once we do notice, then we can take this action of bringing our attention back. But we, and then we have this, another story that we have is, oh man, for the last 5 minutes I've been doing nothing other than talking to myself in zazen. But that is actually, that's not a truth in itself. That's not a objective fact of the matter. That's just another thought that has arisen in this moment. And in this moment, we can see it as a story about that other long line of moments. And we do what we can when we can. So, and it doesn't matter. There is no way to kind of stand outside this and judge it for ourselves. There, because all of those judgments are more stories we're telling ourselves. And so in sitting in zazen, we bring our attention back over and over and over again. Or just the one time when the bell rings at the end of the period and we realize, oh, we should have been doing a little bit of zazen. But it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't actually matter, because an additional part of zazen is being received by this wide and forgiving path. And so we are practicing this way of being with our mind, practicing this way of noticing the energy of grasping and aversion, knowing the stories, recognizing the stories and the certainties that arise, and seeing when we've gotten narrowed down and caught up by them. And when we notice that, to move our attention back, even for a millisecond. And we do this in zazen, we do this in the zendo as a model of how to take up the rest of our lives. And one frame that describes the rest of our lives is the precepts of right action, the three grave precepts and the 10 pure precepts. And the grave precepts are to cease from harm, to do good, and to do good for others. And in a way, those are, and then the grave precepts give some specific ways in which that might happen. And we can only, and so the precepts also so easily become a stick for us to beat ourselves about the head with, another way for us to judge ourselves and find ourselves wanting. But in fact, the precepts are just like zazen. And when we have failed to follow through with our intentions in that moment, we can bring our attention back to our lives as they are, back to this moment, and to some extent, to whatever extent we can be the person we mean to be for whatever duration we can. And then and then we get caught up in the habit energy again, and we kind of go dark and don't have any moments of choice. And that goes on for some period of time. Maybe it goes on for a few minutes, 6 hours, a day, or several years. But at the end of those several years, when we notice, oh, I've really been caught up in this story of anger for the last however long, in that moment, that is the moment that you can choose. That is the moment that you can act. Those several years are gone. And in a way, those several years are right here. They are contained in the story of this moment. And this moment is where you can choose. And in that space, you can take responsibility. You can apologize. You can atone. You can do something different. You can do whatever you can do in the amount that you can do it when you can do it, just as we're practicing in Zazen. And there's an uncomfortable... So first of all, the path of practice is not a linear thing from here, one point straight through to the end point when you're all set. It is, of course, more like a spiral. We go around and around seeing the same kind of challenges, the same kind of insights about those challenges, the same kind of barriers, difficulties, freedoms, and constrictings. We see them again and again, but each iteration, we get a little more space around them, maybe a very little more space, maybe just the space of going, oh, okay, well, this is time 5004 to that I've fallen in that same trap, that same pattern. There's a point in practice, or more specifically, a recurrent kind of point in practice, something that happens to all of us, when we see ourselves acting in some habitual pattern. We see ourselves doing exactly what we intended not to be doing. We see ourselves completely caught up in the energy of grasping aversion or certainty. We see ourselves caught up in stuff that we know causes harm and suffering to ourselves or to others, but we can't change it. All we can do is see ourselves doing that same old thing. And this can be profoundly disheartening. There's a way that we can spin this to ourselves that it invalidates the entire path of practice. I've been practicing so long and still I'm doing this thing. But actually, that's a very fruitful place, and it's a very positive development, because the reality is that how many times have you engaged in those actions? Have you followed those patterns, gotten caught up in those stories and not even noticed it? So it actually is a major step forward to be in the excruciatingly uncomfortable place of seeing yourself act out patterns that you wish you could change, but being unable to change them. Seeing yourself, seeing moments of freedom arise and pass away and go completely those opportunities completely untaken. Over and over and over again. And in a way, this is like when we sit down in Zazen and see our monkey mind just doing its thing, just moving and bouncing from place to place to place, right? That's what it does. That's what it's always been doing. But now, tonight, in this moment of Zazen, we see that. How wonderful. Nice work. And so there's a practice of forgiving ourselves for being human, forgiving our minds for being the minds of humans, forgiving our karma, our habit energy, our patterns for being the patterns that we human beings create. And starting in these moments, in this moment right now, and to notice that you've just missed 4,000 opportunities to do something, and then there comes an opportunity maybe that you can take, even if it's just a small moment of forgiveness for having missed those other opportunities, and then another 4,000 come down the line and you miss those. Doing what we can, when we can, in the amount we can. For me, there's an element with the when we can of that comes up for me of, I don't wanna. So I notice this habit pattern come up. I notice me kind of getting caught up in righteous anger or getting, and I see a moment of choice and I am aware that I am in a way choosing to kind of remain mired in my anger, and that I can't actually and I can't actually bring myself to want to do anything different than just kind of sit and scowl at myself or at my life or at that guy who's really making me angry. And I see that too. I don't wanna, oh God. And that becomes another place where we can imagine we're finding objective verification from the universe about how bad a person we are. That we don't even want to do the right thing in these moments. We don't even want to be the person we mean to be. We don't even want to practice kindness towards ourselves or towards anybody else. We don't want to bow down to this Buddha of grasping aversion or certainty appearing to us. And so is that an objective failing? Is that us having completely skewed off the path? It's actually not. And my experience, so there's so much about this, about the effectiveness of this practice that is kind of, it's almost paradoxical. So when you see those things, when you see that I don't want to do it, and then recognizing that part of what's going on there is that you don't actually have that choice, that there isn't anything that you can do in that moment. There isn't any other there isn't any other way you could go. There is a way you could go if you were a different person, if you were a better person, if you weren't having the experiences that you were having, if you had practiced more, if you had had different parents, if you had had more money, if you had had whatever, all of those things, all of those kind of counterfactual things. But in this moment, even though you're seeing it, you're not experiencing any choice point. Or if you're seeing a choice point and you're unable to muster the will, the impulse to choose. And then if you can practice patience towards yourself, forgiveness towards yourself, kindness towards yourself, with your own shortcomings, your own inability to act, even when you or your own unwillingness to act. Practicing that, you know, really receiving yourself as you are in those moments is what starts to then. What I found in myself is that when I do that, when I acknowledge that I don't even want to do anything different right now, that seeing that and acknowledging that, turning the light of awareness onto that, sometimes shortens the duration that I'm in that state. And then right after I get done telling my wife how I'm definitely not going to do this thing, not interested, can't possibly, then after I finish that speech, then I say, then there's usually maybe a minute or two go by, and then I'm like, okay, I'll do it. But there has to be that genuine acknowledgement in humility and defeat that there's nothing else you can do, and you can't do that in order to then have something else to do. And this is what happens when we're in any kind of a difficult place, a hell realm of practice, a place where there all that's arising for us is suffering, is pain, is world-shattering grief or fear. And the thing that to do in those kind of hell realms of practice is to just be in hell, to receive that moment, to stop fighting it. And if what's coming up for you is raging, fighting against it, to stop fighting against it. To acknowledge, to really, in humility and defeat, be where you are. And then when you're able to do that, even for a moment, then the space starts to open up. Then you start to have other ways to be with your experience, other choices that you can make, and the hell realm starts to dissolve, and we are metaphorically born into the human realm, which is the realm where there's still suffering, but we have enough space from it to be able to work with it. But we have to. You can't trick yourself. There's no way to kind of shortchange. There's no shortcut. You can't accept it as it is in order that it's going to be different, which is so much the game that we want to play. Although, paradoxically, accepting it as it is what starts to allow the potential for things to be different. Accepting yourself as you are, accepting your inability or unwillingness to stay on this wide and forgiving path is part of what enables us to see that the path is wide and forgiving, is part of what enables us to find that hidden will, that hidden impulse to follow, to be guided by our bodhisattva aspirations, to cause less harm, to save and serve all beings, and to be true to what we have, whatever amount we have validated and verified of the Buddha way for ourselves. And this way is about seeing the sources of causes of suffering and ways to be free with them, ways to diminish and to be free amid that suffering. But we have to really, really allow and honestly acknowledge that moment of inability, that reality of defeat. And we have to do it knowing or allowing for the potentiality. We have to do it acknowledging that there might never be a way out. That despite all of the facts that, you know, everything that we have thus far experienced has in fact turned out to be impermanent and fleeting, that this thing that we're feeling right now, this might be it for eternity. You have to acknowledge that reality, or if that's what's coming up for you. And then acknowledging that you might be stuck exactly like this, with exactly this amount of suffering, with exactly this little amount of distance from it for forever. That, and as soon as you're able to really settle into that, then space starts to open up. And that as soon as is, of course, misleading, because sometimes that as soon as is hours or days or weeks or lifetimes. But still, there is a way to receive ourselves with a heart of openness, with a heart of forgiveness, and receive ourselves and the universe as it is. And wherever we are with our minds, wherever we are with our practice, wherever we are with our ability to adhere to the precepts, to fulfill the bodhisattva vows, to put our mind where we intend it to be, to let that be enough, to find that moment of enoughness, that moment of fullness, even in inadequacy, even in failure, even in shortcoming. And so with doing what you can do when you can do it, there's in an important way, no way you can fail at that. Because if you can't do it, then you're aiming at something you can't do, or you're aiming at doing something at a time that you can't do it. And so to recognize this is not that time. This is, there's nothing to do. To do what you can do when you can do it. And sometimes all we can do is rail against the desire to do what we can do when we can do it. Rail against ourselves, rail against the moment as it is. And then when we see that, then what we can do opens up and changes. And it's a different when. So in Zazen, in the kind of microscope and microcosm of Zazen, there's no need to judge yourself. There's no need to assess whether your period of Zazen was good or bad, or is good or bad. There's no need to assess, to believe or buy into your judgments of your capacity or the quality of your spirit or any of that. But when whatever arises, whenever you notice that you've gotten caught, especially in a story about the last 5 minutes of Zazen, to practice this moment of Zazen. That is it's like a neon arrow. This story of I'm a bad Zen student or this is a bad period of Zazen is like a big flashing neon arrow that says right here is a moment to practice. Right here is the time that you can make that little teeny inward gesture of coming back. So I think I'm going to leave it there for now, but I wanted to open up the space for questions or comments or complaints or anything that may be coming up for folks. And I'll ask the timekeeper to put 3 minutes on the timer. And if nothing comes up in those, if something comes up in those 3 minutes, please feel free to ask and if to say. Or if nothing, then we'll sit 3 minutes and then conclude with our Bodhisattva vows. Yeah, and so that
but, you know, sometimes you can't because sometimes there's just a, you know, 3 hours of rain in front of you. And,
right.
But maybe you can sort of see maybe the edges of that a little.
That's right. At some point, you can sort of see the edges of that. At another point, you can't.
Yeah.
And that's when there's just the 3 hours
of
rage.
So if I'm wondering, how can I possibly do
That's right. And so when the thought of, oh my God, what can I do? Or I can't do anything. When you notice that, to take up this practice of what's here now, which is it's a way of connecting to the details and texture and flavor of the hell of this moment, to really get to know it, to really look at it carefully, and you can and to notice that, you know, to notice what does it feel like physically, or what are you noted to see the thoughts kind of cycling and spinning in your head. Anger is often like a big tight red ball spinning around in front of me, and to notice that, to look at it, as you say, not with an intention of changing it or anything, but just to see what's there, and that is something we can do when we can't do anything else. And then if we start to do that, if we start to do that one thing of just what is here, of really looking at what is here, then on some kind of time scale, whether it's, you know, a kind of local time scale or a big galactic time scale, then we start to have more choices that open up from there. But that practice of what's here now is a practice that sits kind of right on the border between having no choices and starting to have choices. Yeah. And that what's here now is it really looking at the what's here in this body, mind, psyche kind of conglomeration thing, is a way that we can kind of really, it is a very useful tool to kind of ground ourselves in our own experience to, and part of what it functions to do is detach us a little bit from enacting the autopilot and to just seeing the autopilot's kind of commands and instructions. Failing upward. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. Well observed. Anyone else? Right there with you. Yeah, and sometimes the thing that we can't stop ourselves from doing again is beating ourselves up about being the asshole that we are.
Whereas before I knew I was an asshole, it was just a lot easier.
Right. Right. Well, Right, and so there actually is compassion and humility in realizing. And so the Buddhist term for asshole is actually foolish being. It's a little bit less loaded, but recognizing that we're a foolish being filled with blind passion, who, despite our, you know, our intermittent, you know, aspirations to do good, we nonetheless do harm. Despite our intentions to cause less suffering, we cause more. And, you know, and sometimes we don't even want to be anything other than a foolish being. And that's the nature of being a foolish being. Yeah. Or an asshole. In your case, obviously. Thanks, John. Well, it's another if only. If only I were less lazy. If only I were more energetic.
If only. Special.
Right. 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 And yeah. And so even noticing that this is that you're just lazy is the thing that you imagine is the bedrock truth of your existence, that there's no way that is actually the ultimate reality, and then getting familiar with that story, you know, and then looking at your old friend, laziness as bedrock truth, here it is again. Yeah. Welcome, laziness. That's right.
It maybe there's space up for that, maybe. Not like the soonest. The soonest was great because that's either little or it's huge.
So the observation is so there's two things that are important there. The observation is the first step, and it's the thing from which all other things come. And there's a way that it's said that awareness itself is self-liberating. Awareness is self-liberating. So when we become aware of what's arising, that awareness of what's arising liberates us from it. Or doesn't. And then we can be aware of that. Yeah. And this is the power of shining the light of awareness on any part of our inward experience. Mm-hmm. Well, self-confidence is another kind of story too. It's self-validation, or it's empowerment. Yeah. You're thinking back to what?
Thank you.
Right, it doesn't actually. Right, and it doesn't help when our loved ones say, there it is, there, it's that anger thing. Yeah, see, there it is, look at it. Do something different right now. Yeah, that's not a helpful approach for me. Maybe you're different. Yeah, it's right, and all we can do rather is to receive ourselves as we are, and in that same spirit to receive this person unable to change, unable to see a larger perspective, this person who lacks self-confidence, who's doing such difficult things, to receive them exactly as they are, yeah. That's right, that's right. And that's how this truth, that we can only do what we can do when we can do it, becomes the root of compassion, because that's also true for other people, yeah. A great note to end on. So let's do the chanted version of the four vows.